Broadcasting live from Pacific Lutheran University in Tacoma, Washington, this is the Radio Hour, a convergence of massed media and laser, Lute Air Student Radio. It's Tuesday, March 15th. I'm Carly Stauffer.
I'm Libby Postavoit, in for Eddie McCoven.
And I'm Paris Franklin. Tonight is a little special because Eddie McCoven is out, so the laser studio estrogen destiny got exponentially higher. That's right, folks. Tonight is the Radio Hour Women's Edition. Thank you so much for listening to the show tonight. We are glad to have you with us. And if you like what you hear on tonight's broadcast and want to read more, be sure to visit mastmedia.plu.edu for the latest campus and community news, arts and culture, and sports.
So, there's been a change in the tides that's been affecting the waves. The airwaves, that is. Changes are coming once again to KPLU and more. Julia Grosvenor has the scoop.
Thank you for that lovely intro. Is my mic on?
Heck yeah, it is. Go for it. Okay, all right. Thank you for the lovely intro. So, you might have seen in the Mast this week that the sale of KPLU has continued to move forward. So, if you've been keeping up to date with the Mast News, or especially the Mast News Radio Hour, PLU has been in the process of selling our radio station, KPLU, to KUOW, the University of Washington's radio station. There were a lot of protests, and so PLU decided to give the listeners a chance to buy back the radio station. And although that continues to go on, sales of KPLU have also continued to extend to handing over properties of the radio station to KUOW. In other news, in terms of radio stations sort of making some changes, another local radio station, Click 98.9, this past Friday, sort of dropped off the face of the earth, so to speak. There was no warning from any of the show's DJs or anyone on the Facebook page, but the company that owns Click 98.9, Hubbard, decided on Friday that they were dropping Click 98.9, which had a sampling of modern alternative music, and it randomly cut to Frank Sinatra and other lounge music on Friday, nonstop, no commercials, only interrupted for legal IDs with no explanation. And the website, interestingly, changed to a very interesting sort of blank screen with song lyrics, a link to Listen Live? And a couple of bubbles bouncing around the screen. And if you clicked on them, they would say fun things like, hee hee, that tickles, or this is strange. So, a lot of interesting radio changes happening for sure. Currently, there is no report as to what exactly will be done with Click 98.9. Currently, they've been going from lounge music to Red Hot Chili Peppers to some old show tunes. It's really hard to predict what they're gonna do next.
I mean, why not just keep it going the way they are? I think it's pretty entertaining. I mean, we were all laughing about the website right before the show started. That was how we were getting jazzed for the evening, was just seeing what fun phrase would pop out next.
Yeah, the story behind the website, though, has me kind of intrigued. It honestly looks like it's been hacked or something. I mean, it hardly looks intentional, but it's definitely a good way to spend your time if you don't want to do your homework, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. Solid procrastination yeah. method.
I think that Julia mentioned that it was more fun than Facebook.
Whoa. Yeah.
That's a statement.
I mean, does Facebook have bubbles that bounce around the screen? No, they have, like, ads.
Well, now it will. Once Mark Zuckerberg hears this podcast, he's going to make sure it does.
Yeah. He will get right on that.
And then we're going to have bouncing bubble ads. That, like, if you're like, oh, I don't want to click on this ad, well, guess what? It's moving around, so you click it on accident.
And it's so shiny. I mean...
Yeah, bubbles.
I mostly just like the robot telling me interesting things about life.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I just loved when the robot was like, hee hee, in the most seductive, flirtatious voice possible.
Yeah, if you guys, all robots sound.
If you guys don't know what we're talking about, you definitely need to check it out. You'll have hours of endless fun and entertainment.
It's just click989.com. It's, hours of entertainment.
Click it.
Like, kind of on a more serious note, though, how do you think this is going to affect the community? Just the loss of 98.9?
Well, honestly, I thought it was a more devastating change than it has turned out to be, because I thought radio was more popular than it was. I would have assumed that everyone had noticed this change, but it seemed to mostly be me and then, like, a lot of people's parents. Like, I posted on Facebook about it, and I had, like, reply comments, but from people's parents. And I was like, okay. I thought it was, like, a cool young person station, but I guess not.
Well, I mean, I guess the thing is everyone has their Pandora or Spotify or iPods, auxiliary cords, everything in the car nowadays. I mean, it's just easier, I guess, for it to come right off of
and
your
phone.
And
they're so busy listening to Loot Air Student Radio all the time.
Exactly. So many podcasts to be had.
We're not even on the radio.
We're not even technically on the radio, which is really sad because it's fun when we take prospective students in here. We talk about how we have a student radio station and
on
we are not actually broadcast via the radio, which I think is unfortunate because I listen to the radio.
Well,
but I am like Julia and we are some of the few.
Well, fun fact, student radio used to be on a radio station, and I'm not talking about before KPLU was like a public radio station. Like, we had a student radio station, but it was on such a low frequency, people had to have, like, special adapter boxes just to listen to it. So internet streaming is much more convenient.
Right. For all of you listeners out there, we're glad that you joined us because the internet exists. So thank you, World Wide Web, for showing these people the way to our voices.
You're listening to The Radio Hour, brought to you by Mast Media here on Laser Loot Air Student Radio. I'm Carly Stauffer. Next up, Libby will be discussing a new state bill.
All right, everyone. So, the Washington State Senate and House of Representatives recently passed a bill that would initiate media literacy and digital citizenship education in the public school system. So, I actually interviewed for this story, which I wrote.
So proud of you.
I'm super proud too.
Good job, Libby.
Yeah, and very modest.
As always.
Oh, the humility.
And the cuteness.
That is clearly the best way to introduce yourself, is as the cuteness.
Yes.
Or the cute one.
Yeah, I am. But going on to the story. So I interviewed State Senator Marco Lias about it. He actually introduced and sponsored this bill. And it's discussing especially like digital citizenship and media literacy, in that students are very underprepared right now to join the world of media, especially like with Facebook and stuff. Not just like posting inappropriate pictures and not being safe, like with cyberbully types and creepy stalkers, but also just how to utilize digital media, especially, and how to make the most out of the resources we have now with such instant communication. So any thoughts on just media literacy and the impact this might have?
I think that honestly sounds like a great idea, and I'm honestly surprised something like this hasn't been introduced earlier. Mm-hmm. And I think it's extremely important. I mean, there's obviously many positive effects of the impact of media on our lives. But, I mean, it's also, in a way, a sort of a monster if you don't know how to use it. And just with younger and younger kids being able to have access to media, I mean, that just opens the door for a lot of negative consequences. So I'm actually very happy that that bill passed.
Well, I think kids these days have it too easy. Back in my day, we had to teach ourselves how to use the media. I mean, someone handed me an iPhone and I just pressed buttons until I knew how to use it.
Everyone, that was Julia Grosvenor revealing her true age.
No, that was actually some old man, you know, just wandered into the studio with a very high-pitched voice. Definitely was not me.
See, I think that it's a great idea that we will be teaching students how to use the media, because that is unfortunately a part of the world that we live in. But I think that if we're going to include that, then we should definitely keep cursive handwriting in schools and maybe, you know, teach children how to use the postal system. I think that could be effective as opposed to making them go into Facebook, because I know that I personally had a difficult time trying to figure out how to mail a letter when I moved away from my home.
No, I think you know, this kind of introduces, it seems like, a whole new, it would seem applicable to have a lot of classes that are just, like, basic life skills focused, you know, because this is definitely a life skill. I mean, I would have appreciated, you know, a tutorial on how to do your laundry, how to do taxes, you know. This is
personal
the kind
finance.
Of, right, I mean, this is the kind of stuff that I think should be taught in the homes. I mean, responsible parents, I think, should be expected to be able to teach their kids how to use the media, how to, you know, do laundry, how to do taxes. But the government kind of steps in when, you know, parents and the family aren't fulfilling those sort of roles. Yeah. And so, I mean, what else are we missing from our education?
One thing about this that I hadn't mentioned before, because I was very irresponsible, was that Senator Leas, he was mentioning that this bill is much more about starting the kind of the conversation and having schools and parents actually kind of form fit it more to their community's needs. Mm. The bill hasn't yet been signed into law just because it's just been delivered to the governor. But yeah, so this is the bill, SB 6273. So support.
Thank you, Libby. Sounds good.
Hello, people. I'm Monica Payne, and I wanted to say that if they're starting a bill about starting the conversation about social media, why aren't they starting a bill about, like, the conversation that every parent should have with their kids about, like, the birds and the bees or something like that?
Cool.
I mean, we don't want to get into, like, the state's policies on sex education, because usually those are also very interesting.
Yeah, and Washington State has considerably good policies on that, I think.
I mean, we already have legislation regarding sex education laws, correct? That's already, like, in the schools. I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean it's quality, but that's in the schools.
It doesn't mean it's effective, but it does exist already.
Media literacy, I mean, as far as I know, that has not been a part of our education system, so...
And I went to elementary school in a different state, and I remember that most of the classes that we would have that wouldn't be the elective classes or they wouldn't be the general core classes were usually related to things like typing, which was indeed something that we needed to know how to do for school. So I think it's really interesting when these laws come up that relate to things that are important life skills but don't necessarily have to do with education, so to speak.
Right, but it seems like technology is just going to become a greater and greater part of education. So, I mean, I felt like I had to get a smartphone just because I was going to college, because I knew that a lot of professors would rely on us being able to use our smartphones, have smartphone capability, know how to use email, etc. So...
Definitely. I think it is hard to be a part of the world that we live in when you are a little bit behind on technology. So I think it's useful that these things will be implemented. But I personally am not a fan. I think it's important. And I sure. think that just because the way that the world works, it is necessary that we have these classes. But in an ideal situation, I would definitely want to move away from that.
I'm with you there.
Well, you are listening to the Radio Hour on Laser. The number to call in case you have any opinions about this, is 253-535-7332. That is 253-535-7332. And follow us on facebook.com/PLUMastMedia or tweet us at PLUMast to add your voice to this discussion that is now slightly ironic because we're asking you to use social media to contact us.
Might want to take a class first.
In case you didn't get these, like, this very important class.
Coming up after the break, we're talking about the Redefining Disabled campaign. But first, here's No Control by One Direction.
Welcome back to the Radio Hour on Laser. That was The Wolf by Mumford & Sons, and before that was No Control by One Direction. Next up, we are discussing the Redefining Disabled campaign featured on the front cover of this week's Mast. Take it away, Libby.
Thank you. I'm really excited about this story because Redefining Disabled is a campaign first year Ayanna Cole started to spark conversation and spread awareness about people with disabilities, specifically regarding educational opportunities. A lot of this was based on her personal experiences living with the condition spina bifida. And her education PLU professor, Vidya Thiramothi, had some especially insightful comments, I thought, about Ayanna's campaign and how it relates to the current approach to special education in public schools.
Sounds like a really interesting topic, Libby.
Yeah, like, it was so much fun. I got to interview her for it, and she's just, like, honestly, I couldn't imagine a better figurehead for this campaign. Just because she does kind of live this message of you can do it, don't let people put you into a box, that sort of thing.
So what are, when you mentioned the current approach to special education, so what exactly do you mean by that?
So Ayana and also her education professor, Professor Thermothy, they were discussing how special education typically takes a one-size-fits-all kind of approach, in that people who have different abilities, because they all fit under the umbrella of special education, special needs, they're treated like they all have the same needs when they don't. Everybody's different and everybody has different abilities. Right. And
they're dreams. Individuals too. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So does anyone have any personal experiences with this, I guess?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, I do.
This is our friend Monica.
Hello, I believe you're joining us again.
She's been in the studio the whole time, keeping time as one does.
Yes, I have.
So what do you think, Monica?
Well, first I'm going to tell my personal experience with specifically my brother, my little brother who is about 16. I love him to death. His name is Donald. He has autism. And at my high school that I went to, of course, because it was my high school, for all of the special needs kids, they kind of block them off from the halls. They would put them in these hallways and for most of the day, and I wouldn't get to see them. They would stay in there most of the time and only come out either at lunch or to just randomly walk around when nobody else really was about. And after lunches, after all the other students went up to their classes, they would have them clean up after the students, clean up all their garbage. And I get, you know, they try to teach them how to do jobs so that way they can one day go out into the professional field and get paid for doing something. Right. But that's not the way you do it. You do not have them do the janitorial work, ever.
Right, because that just seems sort of disrespectful. I mean, that's just doing the work that no one else really wants to do.
Exactly, and I hated it. Of course, I couldn't do anything about it, but I hated it. And I felt like they were just enclosing them. And I remember when I was in my psychology class, we learned that in... don't remember how many decades ago, but I think in the early to mid 20th century, there were these houses that housed the special needs, and people would just send their children there because they would think something's wrong with them. They wouldn't know what to do, and I felt like that was kind of a new age way of doing that.
So you feel like that it actually hasn't changed that much? Like this is just a different manifestation of that in a way?
Yeah, I mean, it's not, of course, as bad because it's not, you know, you're not sending your children to a house to live for who knows how many years, but
they're still hidden.
Yeah, they're still hidden, and I hate that. I really wish, like, now I could see the other side of this of the coin and how be like, well, we just don't want these students to make fun of them. We just don't want them to we just don't want them to pick on them. Just don't want them to make them feel like they're not normal. Yeah, but are you really making it any better by keeping them away?
Right. Seems like there could definitely be a better solution. So, Libby, would you mind talking about what's Ayana's, is it Ayana?
Ayana, I believe.
Ayana. Okay. So what's her campaign doing to change that?
She's sparking conversation about the issue. So mainly just, I think that she follows, what's her name? Malala Yousafzai's approach, kind of, with education is the key to ending discrimination, violence, etc. She just wants to spread awareness first and maybe, like, just get rid of the stigma attached to saying disabled, disabilities, like, and just talking about these things. Because the fact that discrimination still exists, I think, reflects the fact that we don't talk about it.
It's really interesting. She's also been able to go into some elementary schools and talk there. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really good to start at a younger age.
Absolutely.
Because then you can show that, like, these are normal people and they just might be a little bit different. That doesn't mean they are disabled, as one would say. Like, there's just something that's different about them. And so that's a good way to teach everyone that I mean, it shouldn't be so stigmatized.
Mm-hmm. And, like, another thing is that Ayana, like, yeah, she has a wheelchair, but also she's honestly, like, probably the smartest, most inspiring person I've interviewed at PLU during my whole year working with the MAST. She's so impressive, and she's only a first year. And I like her because she brings hope to this issue.
Right. I think you mentioned she has a tattoo. That's right. That says Able.
Yeah.
I thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
So you're listening to the Radio Hour, brought to you by MAST Media here on Laser Loot Air Student Radio. I'm Carly Stauffer, and next up we'll be discussing PLU's confusing budget. Paris, what's the story?
Well, the rumor mill never disappoints, especially when it comes to financial matters.
Oh, boy.
So many of us on campus have recently been hearing rumors that PLU's demise may or may not be imminent. So before I start to worry the student population who is listening right now, these rumors might not have a basis in reality. But they also could. So in order to try and figure out just exactly what is going on, the editor-in-chief of the MAST, Samantha Lund, wanted to make sure that Lutes were at ease. And so when she started looking into the budget here at PLU, because as some of you may know, we do actually release the budget every year, so it is a public document that anyone is able to look at if they so desire. Mm-hmm. So she went on a journey, and it seemed to lead to more questions than answers, meaning that one article was not enough to cover it. So, look forward to the next MAST, in which we will start a series of student journalist analyzation of the yearly budgets that are released, and we're going to try and determine exactly what is going on with our beloved university. Because we would like to come back. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I'm sure that everyone else here wants to come back as well.
Right.
Just a little bit.
I definitely appreciate her intent in trying to give a little more clarity to this issue, but one thing that kind of had me a little concerned when I was reading the article was that she sounded very uninformed about the financial state of PLU, and I mean she admitted she was quite confused at a lot of points during the article, but that made me wonder, you know, should you be trying to translate something for someone if you don't know the language? You know, I kind of wanted someone with a background in finance to be commenting on the budget, so I actually felt like I would be gaining answers, you know, because right now I kind of felt like the article maybe only increased uncertainty on campus and anxiety, because it did mention those rumors about the possibility of PLU someday, you know, in the future. I mean, just stuff that, as far as we know, it doesn't have a basis. So I definitely appreciate that the article is trying to provide some clarity, but I think you shouldn't really address this issue unless you are an informed writer about it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's what this sort of series is going to hopefully bring some light to, because, yeah, I mean, one article wasn't enough. And, yeah, I mean, Samantha is not the greatest person to talk about that, just because I think it's confusing for any student to look at. So even though they release these documents, obviously we might not know exactly what a specific fund might be going, or I mean, what the purpose of that could be. And maybe every university has that, but we're just not aware of it. So I think that the goal with this is to try and have some more research and see what the budget should look like and make sure it's comparing well to sort of other universities, because I think that is a good way for student journalists specifically to try and figure it out. But yeah, I agree. And when Carly mentions this article, she means it was an article that aired in last week's MAST, and then hopefully in the next upcoming MAST, which we actually have a break for spring break, and some of our other student journalists are currently at a conference, so we have a few weeks off. But when the next one comes out, we are trying to gain more insight about the issue and hopefully not increase anxiety, but definitely reduce anxiety for students.
Good. Sounds good.
Financial stuff, and you want to look into the budget and talk about it, the MAST would love that. You could even come on this radio show and talk about it. We would love to have you.
If you have some expertise, please join us.
Like, if you're a professor, that'd be cool too.
Yeah, if we have any professors listening, and I think that's part of the series as well, as trying to contact people who are more of experts than some of us 18 to 22 year olds who have probably never had to look into a budget.
Yeah, not to mention communications majors, most of us. And let's just say that we didn't end up here because we love math.
I love math. But I don't know anything about money. I mean, we definitely want a reliable source telling us if we should be worrying, you know.
All I know is that ramen and Kool-Aid go a long way.
Oh, jeez. Answer real.
In case you're busy paying off your student loans right now.
just start telling you know, President Christ, like, hey, you know, just, like, do you have any idea how many ways you can eat ramen? And, like, the budget will be fixed in a minute.
Cereal for every meal.
Yep.
All right. Thank you, girls. Coming up next, we're talking about Women's History Month.
Woohoo!
But before we do, time for a little music. Here's The Sound by the 1975. This is the Radio Hour, a convergence of mass media and laser.
Welcome back to the Radio Hour, Women's Edition, or as Carly so eloquently put it, estrogen is the bestrogen. That was Sweet Nothing by Calvin Harris, featuring Florence Welch. Before that, we heard Sound by the 1975. The number to call in is 253-535-7332. That's 253-535-7332, or tweet us at PLUMAST. If you want to check out any of the other shows on Laser this week, head to plu.edu/laser to find a complete program schedule. And Paris will be discussing Women's History Month. Take it away.
Woohoo!
Well,
there have been a number of things on campus this month in order to celebrate, as we all know, estrogen being the bestrogen. So, one of the things that I personally was able to attend was a talk by Dr. Elizabeth Fenn in Xavier 201 that happened last Wednesday on, I believe that was March 2nd. And it was just a wonderful lecture about Sacagawea, who Dr. Fenn regards as, oh, I'm sorry, actually, I don't know if she has a doctorate. I know she is the head of her history department, but I think I might be wrong when I said that. I'm sorry, correction. Elizabeth Fenn, a professor at the University of Colorado Boulder. I'm sorry about that.
Fenn the expert.
Fenn the expert, yes. She's won a Pulitzer Prize for one of her novels, her nonfiction books, and it won the Pulitzer Prize for history. So she obviously does have enough knowledge about the subject, and she gave a speech to a very, very crowded audience in Xavier 201 to the point where people were sitting on the floor.
Wow.
I myself was one of those people, or were one. Was one. And there were a lot of people standing at the back because everyone was so interested in this lecture.
Mm-hmm.
Because Fenn was saying how Sacagawea is one of the most notable figures for a woman in American history. And so obviously it's a very important issue that we talk about, how she was one of the people who was so influential in getting the country to be what it is today. Because when we had the Louisiana Purchase, Lewis and Clark needed a little bit of assistance out there on the Front Range.
Yeah, I'm just thinking. So you mentioned that you were sitting on the ground because it was so crowded. Did you think that Sacagawea was a person that you could really look up to based on the lecture?
Oh, definitely.
Forgive my pun.
Yes, absolutely.
I was wondering if that was intentional.
Yeah, she did seem as though she was quite the wonderful woman. And it was interesting because she did have Fenn had so much more information about Sacagawea than I've ever heard before. For example, her name actually means grass woman. And Sacagawea just means grass woman in Shoshone, which is her native language. And she had actually been taken when she was about 13 from her Shoshone village. And she was taken by a different tribe who then ended up living with them at the end of her journey. And two other Shoshone women ended up at the end of the journey with her. And then that was where she met her husband, Toussaint Charbonneau.
Charbonneau.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
That's just a cool name.
It is a pretty good name. Yeah, he was a fur trapper, if you couldn't tell by the French influences. So she was actually contracted via her husband by Lewis and Clark. So Lewis and Clark, they couldn't technically hire her because, sadly, she was owned by her husband.
Ooh.
And so...
Boo,
yes,
feminism.
Nobody should be owning anyone else. However, so she was contracted by them, and then she was really influential in leading them out to get all the way where they needed to go. And one of the most important things that I took away is that not only was she such a leader of this expedition, but just her very presence probably saved the entire party's lives, because they were a group of men who were unfamiliar with the territory.
Right.
So if people saw that group of men coming, if they didn't have a woman and a child with them, or I guess a very young infant at the time, then they would have been seen as a war party, and they would have most likely been attacked and killed immediately.
So basically,
history proves that estrogen is the bestrogen.
Estrogen is the bestrogen. That's exactly. Right. I want to pin this as that. Yes. If I remember correctly, although this is a very uncertain thing to say because I am remembering from seventh grade history Lewis and Clark documentaries, I think there were several moments in the expedition when she did things like save all of their supplies and their journals. I think, if I remember, there was one point in the journey where they lost all of their papers and notebooks into a river, and she, I think with a baby on her back, saved all of those records. I mean, so she contributed to the whole expedition in countless ways.
Yeah. Like, it kind of makes me think how many other women like her have gone unrecorded. Mm-hmm. Yeah, wow. I think that we need more than a month.
Thank goodness she was remembered, right, because how many were in similar situations that we don't know about?
Yeah. That's such a wonderful point. And, yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting that, I mean, all we get today when you do talk about Sacagawea is there's a coin, and if you've ever seen Night at the Museum, a pretty cool portrayal of her in that. And then beyond that, I think, yeah, she's mentioned for maybe a day or two in like seventh grade or eighth grade history class, and mm-hmm. that's about all you learn. But it's interesting that she did actually contribute so much more than she's ever been given credit mm-hmm. for.
Well, and she was a woman. She had a life. She had a baby. The fact that she was able to make this journey with a baby on her back is pretty darn impressive. And then she didn't have women with her till like the very end.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, how lonely that must have been.
Oh, she had to put up with so much testosterone.
Yeah.
Nothing rhymes with... Best doesn't rhyme with... Well, I guess it does, but...
Best around
testosterone. It doesn't sound as good, you know? Testosterone.
We didn't have a rhyme prepared.
No, it's not as cool.
Yeah, I think estrogen just sounds so much prettier.
I just like her, too, because she's an outdoorsy lady. I mean, you know.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. That clicks with me. I feel like we could be good friends.
And she was a diplomat. Like, she advocated.
It's true. Well, and the reason that they wanted her specifically is because she did have the Shoshone language skills, she knew the geography, and she also knew the languages of some tribes surrounding that area. Mm-hmm. And so they needed her to go through and translate and explain what they were after and that they were just casually passing through.
Yeah. I mean, who can, being in the Pacific Northwest, it's especially close to home. I mean, who can say if things would be the way they are here without her, you know?
Yeah, so I feel true. Like, and she saved a piece of our history. Like, how insightful she must have been to risk, you know, just getting after, like, those documents. So.
Well, thank you so much for talking about that. That was awesome.
Well, I was just going to say, not to mention with her knowing all those languages, I've never actually figured out what is the correct way to pronounce her name.
Oh,
because people say Sacagawea right. and Sacagawea, and it's like her name means grass woman, and it's like, well, if that's the English version, I'll just start calling her like grass woman. Like, isn't grass woman so cool?
It is pretty
you
awesome.
You know, like my name means soft bearded, so you know, people can call me soft bearded now.
Thanks a lot.
I got attached to Sacagawea because the documentary that I had to watch in seventh grade, the narrator had quite a funny voice, and every time he said her name, he said it like, Sacagawea. Oh.
I believe that is actually the correct pronunciation.
Oh, dang it.
Wikipedia is telling me there's three correct pronunciations.
Oh, there are three. Okay, see, yeah. And the woman who was giving the talk, who is a very talented speaker, I must add, she was definitely keeping the audience's attention the entire time, and she said Sacagawea.
Well, whatever her name it was, she was a fantastic woman.
And grass woman was
worth
radical.
Remembering this month. So that's our show for tonight, but make sure to check out After Hours with Rami and Kyle at 7 p.m. this Thursday.
And on Fridays, don't miss Sports Talk with Christian Bond, Kellen Westering, and Drew Artisoni at 11 a.m. And listen to Molly in the Morning with Molly Yundel Mondays at 10:30 a.m.
We hope to catch you back here next Tuesday for feature stories at 7 p.m. with Brooke Thames, Samantha Lund, and Courtney Miranda, and of course, back here at 9 p.m. for another edition of the Radio Hour. In the meantime, be sure to check out massmedia.plu.edu.
I'm Carly Stauffer.
I'm Libby Postavoit.
And I'm Paris Franklin. This has been the Radio Hour, a convergence of Mast Media and Laser. Thanks for listening. This is not goodbye, but good night.